Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Masses, brought to you by the OutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today, I have on the phone a very special guest, actually. I invited my cousin Anthony to be on today because we're going to talk about hunting with your kids. And I don't know too many people that do a better job. One, he's an excellent father. And two, he does a really excellent job of teaching his kids and being patient and taking an approach so that they stay with it. Because it's very easy, in my opinion, for a kid to lose interest in something. They get excited about them. You get excited about they want to be like dad. They want to be like mom. And they start doing it and they realize, especially with something like hunting, where there's quite a bit of, disappointment. There's quite a bit of downtime. There's a lot of hiking and work and stuff that goes into it. And that's not always fun. You grow to love those things as an adult, but that's not always fun, especially as a kid. Long hours of waiting for something to come in, or, not seeing animals and so on and so forth. So, Toluk, how you doing, brother?
What's going on, Johnny boy? How are you?
Good, man. I'm getting ready to leave for Western Game Expo. Joe's going to meet me up there, meeting my buddy Chad. And we're going to go give it hell for a day or so and see what they got going on over there. Kiss some hands and shake some babies. Go to a couple of my sponsors and, say hello. Stuff
get
like
some
that.
More hunts. And meet some new people to find some more hunts for you that I could come on.
So
right, we'll stick with the Wyoming for now.
Yeah, so speaking of Wyoming, I took Anthony to Wyoming for his first time on an antelope hunt this year. It was fun. We had a good time. We had a lot of opportunity on stalks. And Anthony, after a few follies, we ended up making it happen. We got on some really good goats, actually. It was kind of a funny story with Anthony. We found this one buck, and he was wounded already. He had something up with his leg. I don't know if he got hit by a car or whatever, but he was limping a little bit. But he was still getting around plenty fine. He just had a limp and stuff like that. But he was a good, respectable goat, probably low 70s, low to mid 70s.
Probably the biggest goat we had seen so far, probably in the trip.
True.
I think he was probably the heaviest, probably. I wouldn't say he was the tallest, but he was definitely the heaviest.
Yeah.
He was an older goat for sure.
Yeah, and we were hunting pretty heavily hunted public land. It's a big checkerboard out there, so we're always constantly checking the Onyx maps, whether we're on private and on public and so on and so forth. And anyway, we find this goat, and he is just bedded in the most perfect spot. Like, we haven't had, up until this point, we were like 4 or 5 days into it at this point, and we haven't had one goat that was actually in a really workable position. I mean, we still went after him and still made plays on him, but we never really found one that was. And here it is, the best goat we've seen, and we got this one big goat. And he's bedded down, he's laying on the hillside, he's probably, I don't know, what was he, 60 yards down from the top, maybe?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think it was like 62 yards. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grabbed Anthony. I'm like, listen, so we're going to get this bastard right now. And we stalk him in, and he gets to the edge, he peeks over, and he sees the goat. He raises him up. He flips in his bow, and he goes to draw back, and the arrow goes beep, about 10 yards. I don't know if it's arrow release or if he hit the trigger or whatever, but you should have seen his face. It was pretty funny. I wish I had it on film, actually.
The arrow was in. It was when I clicked the trigger, I guess it wasn't on the loop. And when I pulled back, I mean, I pulled back and it just snuck out of there. It was a rookie mistake, you know. You're excited. You see a big goat, and it was my first trip doing antelope hunting, and I muffed the shot, which it's all right. I learned a lot on that trip. We had a great time. I mean, probably one of my funnest trips.
You redeemed yourself the very next day. I sent him off on his own because I was going to go chase some muleys around. I said, well, you know where everything's at now, you know. And he went out and he ended up shooting a goat on his own. So it was pretty cool.
It was fun. It's great times.
Well,
at least I don't pass on 10 freaking mule deer that are 150, 160 plus, you know, at least walking 40 yards.
Certain mule deer, man. I didn't want to just go there and shoot just anything. I got plenty of medium-sized bucks on my wall, man. I'm like, I got the museum of the medium in my house. And, I felt like I wanted to get something different. You know, it's not like I hadn't shot something there before. If, you know, it was a different state, I would have definitely shot them, you know. You know me. It's the first time I've been to a state. I'm not that picky.
But I know, but I was like, I was drooling the whole time I was there from start to finish. I mean, every day we're on good bucks. I mean, good, solid bucks. And I'm like, yeah, why don't you just take them? But I know you were out there for a good one. I'm not going to – we did see some really nice ones.
Well,
we had some opportunity.
Next time, listen to me and put in for the mule deer tag, too. It's just the end. Hoping you'll be all right.
It was a last-minute deal.
I know.
Yeah, I know. Well, now I got a little taste, and it's in the blood. It's going to happen again and again.
Nice. Well, your son drew an elk hunt this year, and I'm going to use that as an example because it was part of some of the things that you did this year and leading up to this year with the boys that, we're going to be talking about today. I get the question all the time how do you get your kids interested in hunting? I know what I did. But I have two girls. My son's too young to hunt, as of yet, but I have two girls that I've, taken out and, they show some interest, but they're still not, they haven't really been bit by the hunting bug. What are some of the things that you do to get your two boys interested in her? Or even Sabrina, I mean, your daughter, she loves to shoot, but.
She's probably going to be better than the boys. I mean, the way she is, she's with me 24/7. So we constantly go with she's with the little longbow over there. And she's a good shot. I guess I went through it. I mean, we started with the kids really young. I mean, every time we went camping, I took the kids. And I guess when my first son was born, Sebastian, I think when he was like 2 years old, I bought that little Marlin papoose that you had, for like 40 years. I don't know. I mean, your dad bought it for you when you were like 10 years old.
Yeah.
And I bought one. Yeah. I mean, I bought one when he was 2 years old, and I knew – I'm going to take my kids hunting. I'm like, that thing is the perfect gun. And I think at 3 years old is when I took them shooting for the first time, and I took them camping for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was with you at 4 years old when we went hunting, and we went camping actually with your dad and whatnot, and he shot the .22-250
I don't know if
you remember. Yeah, he was
like
4 or 5 years
that.
Old.
Yeah, I know. I think he was like almost 6 at that point. But I do, because I remember that. That was when he was come up the flagstaff up there by Neartree.
Yeah, that's when.
He was a little bit older. But I remember when you got the papoose and we took him out and we shot up there in Verde Lake, Rio Verde.
He loved it. He loved it. And he was good. He always sat in my lap. He never, he never took the gun. He always knew. I said, I gave him, the spiel, you never touch the gun without daddy. You never point the gun at anybody. And I always repeat myself with them. I mean, it's a constant repetitive thing. And I, now that they're 12 and 10, I mean, they know. I mean, you give them the gun, they know exactly what to do by themselves. And that's because of my repetitiveness with them. I mean, it's 24/7. Even when we're at the house, I mean, I practice them with them. Especially with this last hunt, I practice them with the house. Now, there was no bullets in the gun. I made sure of it. They made sure of it. There's no bullets next to it. But we practice shooting, like dry firing in the house, I mean, at least twice to three times a week before this hunt, just getting steady, getting ready. And, you know, all that practice paid off in the end. So, I mean, that's my number one thing, is all repetitiveness and explain it to them the right way. And you and I mean, I don't want to say we were taught wrong, because, I mean, your dad always just take you out with the BB gun and teach you a lot. I lived in Brooklyn. We couldn't shoot no BB guns out there. We had to wait to come to your house to go shoot that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have that everyday kind of thing. I mean, as a kid, you were, like, phenomenal with the BB gun. I mean, anything was out there, every little sparrow, every little pigeon, everything, you were nailing squirrels, this and that. But that's because you always constantly do it. I didn't get good till probably 10 years ago. And, you know, maybe a little longer.
No,
but I didn't get it. Yeah, I would say, let's say 15 years ago that I got really proficient with the rifle. And then I started with the bow. And, you know, it's just repetitiveness and just doing the right, you know, everything the correct way, like trigger pull, good rest, you know, all those things. And I tell that to my kids. I said, listen, you only get one shot. You're not going to get a second shot. So you got to make the first shot count. Don't, you know, I've messed up how many times? I mean, I messed up many times. I messed up 2 years ago on a coos deer. I don't know. He was 80 yards from me, and I pulled the trigger, you know, and I shanked the shot. But that's because I was standing, and I wasn't in a good rest, and I like.
And your guy weighs 600 pounds?
Yeah. My gun, 15 pounds. I know it's a heavy gun, but if I was steady and I would have, you know, took my time, I would have got that coos deer. But hey, you learn from your mistakes, and that's what I'm trying to teach them. Like I explained to them, I take videos, you know that all the time, of you know, when I'm going hunting. I never post anything. I'm social media illiterate.
Yeah,
I don't
most,
do
yeah,
any
social person. I know. Just kidding.
Yeah. I don't do any Facebook, no nothing. You never see my face unless John Stallone posts it, and everybody's like, "You saw that, Ant? Great job!" And I'm like, "How did you know?" They're like, "Oh, you're on Facebook." I'm like, "Oh, thanks."
I actually posted a picture of me and you yesterday when we were on your elk hunt, and the mosquitoes were so bad I took my base layers off and wrapped it around my head.
That was with your underwear, no?
Yeah, well, the bottoms, the base layer bottoms, yeah.
Oh, my God, that was...
That was so bad.
I'm surprised we didn't get wet now that time. Oh, my God.
That was a bad one. I mean, it was a good hunt. You got opportunity.
No, it was an awesome hunt. Yeah, no, definitely.
Well, you end up shooting one that we couldn't recover. It started raining and everything.
Yeah, he was a monster. He was... Me and Joe teased that he was bigger than the one that you shot because we wanted to, you know, rub it in your face a little bit, but I wasn't able to. So everything's gets rubbed in my face. I have the worst luck with the elk. But, yeah, I mean, it happened.
We're going to make that change. Next one. Next tag.
All right, go
we're
ahead.
Change it. No, it's next tag. We're going to make that we're going to change
this
that
year. This year it's gonna. This year, hopefully, I think I'll draw. Hopefully I'll draw, but and no excuses this time. Not like my son's hunt, so I don't want to give you a little. But
yeah,
next time you promise, you better come.
hey, come on. Well, listen.
I know.
Let's talk about your son's hunt, because that's what the topic is. We'll have you on another time, and then we'll talk about all the crazy hunts that we've had in over the last 40 years. But so leading up, your son drew a bull elk tag here, rifle bull elk late season. What are some of the things that you did to get him prepared for that hunt?
So, well, you know, and I know that prior to the hunt, I purchased a 243 Remington for them, actually a Tika 243 for them, and I bought them for that for Christmas. And on the last shot of the day, my son scoped his eye. So that's like every father's nightmare. My son has been shooting. He had shot my 308 before. He shot John's 22 250. He shot shotguns before. And it's my own fault because, you know, I put a crappy scope on the gun. We just wanted to go and shoot it. They just got it. We were excited to shoot it. And, you know, he had to get really close to the gun, and he basically scoped his eye. And he became having, you know, target panic. And it took me, 4 months to get rid of this for him. I mean, he was just so scared to pull the trigger that it made this hunt even harder than I thought it was going to be. So for every father out there, learn from my mistake. I mean, just buy your kids, you know, the right equipment and make sure that, you know, that they have that good sight alignment, that they're not trying to put their eye so close to the scope to see it, because you're going to have my problem. I'm telling you, they're going to have to be so afraid to shoot. And if it wasn't for you, actually, John, having Joel Turner on your podcast, I mean, I never would have like figured it out, like how do you like correct it? Because, I mean, if you ask Cousin Joe, man, and we went so many times and we took your 22-250 because it kicked less than the 308, he was just, he couldn't pull the trigger. Like, he would not pull the trigger. So that was one thing that we faced that was really hard in the beginning. And then after that little show, basically Joel Turner was like, hey, listen, you need to get it in his head and ask him what's bothering him or what's, you know, why is he scared? And from there on, you know, I asked him, he's like, Dad, I'm scared of the scope hitting my eye. I'm scared of the kick now. I said, and the guy's like, Joel's like, just tell him to put his finger on the trigger and keep on talking to him, keep on pulling, keep on pulling, keep on pulling. And I swear to God, it must have took him maybe 30 to 45 seconds, maybe even a minute, for him to pull the trigger on the first shot that he ever took after, you know, while we were doing that. And then it just kept on building and building. And I would take him, maybe once every week out to the range, to our special spot. And even if we shot just 3 shots, that was enough for me. Like, he didn't want to shoot, like, more than 3 shots because he's like, Dad, I'm done. I'm like, all right, that's fine. We'll come back. And it took me probably, 2 months, maybe even 3 months, to get that fear away from him. And once the hunt was on, I mean, his mantra got like a lot quicker. Like he'd be like, keep on pulling, keep on pulling, keep on pulling. And he was shooting up to 500 yards by the time we were ready for the hunt. So that was one of the biggest, setbacks that we had for the hunt. Mm-hmm. Another thing was I never really hunted the area that we got drawn for. And I mean, I have hunted there, but you know, it's been so long since I had hunted there. So it was kind of like a learning curve to find it, you know, find elk in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was like a challenge that I wanted to like, you know, let the kids learn it too. So I would go out there with both my kids, both my boys, and, you know, do some scouting trips. And I don't know, we went on 4 scouting trips with the boys, you know, just quick ones for the day and come right back. And we couldn't turn up one elk. And that's, for a little kid, man, that's discouraging. I mean, saying, Dad, are we going to see anything? And, you know, you don't want to call everybody and ask for help, but, you know, sometimes asking for help, you just got to ask sometimes. And that's what I did. I mean, I asked you, and you asked a couple of buddies of yours, and the guys from the archery club all came out, and they all, you know, they all helped and explain to me some spots where to go. I had a bunch of friends come help me out, like my buddy Dave Mayer, Gasper came out with me, and we just picked apart, you know, every area possible to like find elk. And I think that's one thing that we as parents need to like understand. Like, if you don't give your kids a good experience, I don't think they're going to want to go. It's like,
yeah,
they get discouraged.
Yeah. And at the same token, they can't think that every time they go out, they're going to, you know, they're going to pull the trigger, or every time they go out, they're going to see animals. So, but you definitely don't want to give him, like you said, 4 trips in a row without even seeing an animal. You know, of course you can't control that, but I don't know. I know some of the things I did, like with my girls and stuff, like I took them with me on stuff that I knew they were going to see something the first couple of times. Whether that was going rabbit hunting with the slingshot, you know, and honestly, that's kind of what we did. I used to take Ella with the slingshot and paintballs, and we would go shoot rabbits with paintballs in the neighborhood. And that's kind of what kind of got her excited about it, you know. She's not really into the actual, like, hunting, but she likes the adventure of it, and she likes shooting. So, you know, those are some of the things I did. And with Olivia, what kind of got her excited a couple of times, I took her coyote hunting with me. Actually, I took them both coyote hunting with me. And, of course, you know, you get a coyote come running in. It's exciting for them, you know. And I, you know, those are things that I know that, you know, more than 50% of the time, I'm going to be able to produce an animal for my kids to see, you know. Where, you know, on a late season elk hunt, you know, the elk are going to be where they're going to be. And if you don't know where that's at, it's kind of a tough gig, you know. So,
oh, it was definitely a learning curve. But, you know, Sebastian has been on hunts with me before, which, you know, it was, you know, especially he came on that cruise deer hunt with you, and you shot that cruise deer on the first day.
I know that got him kind of re-excited about it, getting to be a part of that whole thing.
Yeah, he likes being out in the outdoors. I mean, I have 2 kids, and both my boys are 100% opposites. I mean, as we all probably have, I mean, my kids, you know, 19 months apart, and you would never believe that they're brothers. I mean, they do everything totally different. They like different things. Not one thing is the same. And, you know, I got to approach each boy a different way. I mean, you've been on hunts with both my boys so far, and
mm-hmm.
you know how it is with Sebastian, and you know how it is with Joey. I got to be a little more patient with Sebastian and, you know, get him a little, you know, more excited about, you know, I don't want to say the kill, but like the hunting aspect of it, as Joey just wants to, like, he's all about.
He wants to do is pull the trigger.
He wants to pull the trigger, but you know what? He doesn't want to wait. He doesn't like. He has no patience. And Sebastian's got so much patience, which, thank God, because he would never had fun on that hunt because it was all about patience. I mean, from the second we started, I mean, he was just. The kid walked put about 20 miles on his boots throughout the hunt. We hunted for 5 days. I mean, he did everything I could have asked of him to do. Now, if it was my other son, he would have been done on the first day. He'd have been like, Dad, I didn't kill anything on the first day. Let's go. I'd have been like, what are you crazy? We got 7 days left. But Sebastian, he was like, all right, what are we doing for tomorrow? I mean, his feet were blistered. You know, I called you up because I'm like, yeah, John, what do I do? His feet are all blistered up after the first day. And, I mean, a little bit has to do with me, but, you know, I didn't know that his feet were hurting him that bad. So, I mean, sometimes you just got to stop and listen to your kid and just be like, hey, what's going on? What's bothering you, you know? And,
questions for sure.
And they'll talk to you. They'll tell you, hey, Dad, I'm not having fun. Or, hey, Dad, I'm tired. I mean, I woke him up. I mean, he woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He hiked up, you know, I don't know, maybe like 700 feet vertical, you know, mountain glassing, and, you know, walked back down. And then we walked almost a mile and a half because this guy, Randy, on the top of the hill said, hey, I have a spike. And he's like, I'll help you out. And I never even met this guy. And he's like, go after him, and I'll get you to him. And Sebastian was all about it. Boom. 2 mile walk. I mean, about a mile and a half walk. And the terrain out there, you know, in Flagstaff is not easy. I mean, some of it's easy, you know, it's not like, you know, I mean, I get poked like you are in Tucson with all the cactus, but the rocks and the down timber and whatnot, that's not easy for a kid that's, you know, 4'11". You know, for us, you know, it's a little bit easier, but for them, you got to remember, it's like double hard. So you got to, you know, when you're excited, you kind of want to just go, but you got to kind of like go on their pace. And that's what was told to me by, you know, by the old timers. They're like, you know, if you want your kid to have fun, you need to like go at their pace. Don't go at your pace. You know, listen to them. Try to ask them questions and, you know, make it fun. You got to make the hunt fun for them. And that was like my main thing, was to make it fun for him. Even though, you know, the first 3 days was, you know, somewhat fun, but, you know, we kind of wanted, you know, I thought I could do it by myself and just me and him and having that little time together. But I don't think he didn't have fun until I met up with your buddy Matt Woodward and Steve Doyle, man. He, like, that was like the game changer of the whole hunt. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, we're going to get into that in a minute. Yeah, I want to ask you, because you just said, so having experienced what you did with Sebastian, what are some of the things that a father or mother should consider when they're going to take a kid, you know, a youth hunting? What are some of the things you need to think about, like, you know, even gear wise and stuff like that? Like you said, you know, you gave them hiking boots, but it wasn't really kind of probably really wasn't the best option for what you guys were doing, you know?
I mean, I bought them like Keen boots, and they're good boots. I mean, if I could give any, gear, like give the kids the best gear you could purchase. And I know it's expensive. I know that the kids are going to grow out of it real quick. But if they're miserable while they're on the hunt, they're never going to want to go. I mean, the best thing I did was give them, I mean, I have all size medium clothes, and my kids are big enough now, thank God, you know, they fit in my, like, mediums, so I gave them really good, I mean, they had Under Armour base layer, like a 2.0 and a 2.45 base map, which kept his core, like, warm while we were there, especially in Flagstaff at this time, you know, during that time, it was a December hunt, it was cold, and, you know, these kids are used to 90-degree weather. And going into the cold, you know, once you soon you sit, you know, you freeze. So I took some of my wife's, you know, good jackets, like her thermoball jacket that like rolls up real, you know, compact. You know, I have a medium Sika jacket that I gave him that, you know, it's, you know, waterproof and windproof. You know, you want to give your kids, I don't want to say buy the best gear, you know, but buy something that you know is going to work. And first I gave him, you know, these, nothing against Under Armour, but I gave him these Under Armour gloves, and his hands were getting cold. And I brought like 3 sets of gloves, thinking I brought the snow gloves, I brought these gloves, nothing was working. You know what actually worked the best for him? With these like little thicker, you know, windproof gloves that were mine. They're probably 2 sizes bigger for his hands. But for some reason, those are the only gloves that kept his hands warm. I'm like, they're yours. Take them. You know, he had, you know, his face was cold. I gave him the face mask. You know, things like that you just, it may not be cold for you, but for them, you know, you got to realize that the elements are going to be tenfold for them, especially walking and, you know, especially socks. Socks was like key. I knew going in I was going to get, you know, I had to buy them like really good socks. And I use Patagonia Merino wool socks, and I love them. I use the Darn Tough socks, but those Patagonia socks, I mean, they fit like gloves. They keep your feet warm, and he never complained that one time about his feet, except when he got, you know, he got the little bit of blister, and it blistered up a little bit, but it never like popped or anything. So the next day he was up and, you know, hiking again. But any kid that gets a blister, you know. I mean, even yourself, I mean, you get a blister, you don't want to walk. That's painful. Especially for a little 12-year-old kid, he's going to be like, Dad, I'm done. Mm. And that's the last thing you want to do. You don't want to push him so hard that they don't want to go anymore. So gear is, like, essential. I mean, get him the best as you can.
So don't do what our dad did with us.
And that's what was going through my head.
I almost didn't hunt anymore because I was remembering my dad. And, you know, it's not any fault of his. It's just what we had back then. I was wearing some, like, old, like, military boots. No insulation. They were, like, black, you know, patent leather boots, basically, is what they were. They're from an Army surplus store. And my dad picked them up for me, whatever, and I had them. And we were up in Binghamton, hunting up there by Benny's house with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And it was freaking cold, like you wouldn't believe. And we were just, like, I was so miserable. My hands were cold. I couldn't feel my feet. And we were sitting, you know, back then, what did? We walked in the woods. We found a spot. We sat next to a tree, and we waited for something to come by. And, you know, it was just bad. It was really, 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 really bad. And on the way back, my dad and I came across a pretty big creek, and he was helping me get across, and he fell in the creek. And, so he's soaking wet. I'm freaking miserable cold. And I was like, this hunting stuff sucks, you know? I was like 10 years old, and, you know, I really, back then, I used to love going small game. And why? Because you get to pull the trigger a lot, you walk around, you know, all the things that kids don't like, you had to do back then for big game. You sat still, you didn't do nothing, and you waited. You froze your ass off, and you didn't see as many animals. So, you know, it's doing stuff like taking kids small game, getting them interested in sport, taking them to go shoot 3D, stuff like that, is what's key to keeping them interested. Because if you give them too many experiences, like, you know, blistered up feet and being cold and so on and so forth, it's gonna take the joy out of it for them, and then they're only gonna be like, oh, you know what, I get 30 seconds of joy for, you know, 2 days of misery, 3 days. You know, it's like, I think that's the key. I think
another thing about key is that keeping them busy doing the same thing that you're doing, like whatever I had for my son. Another thing was like, I, you know, not to say I had another 15x56 HD, you know, Swarovski to give to him, but I borrowed my brother's Nikon 12x and I borrowed a tripod from you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was glassing. I mean, he kept himself busy. I mean, he was spying up coyotes and he was spying up, you know, deer. I mean, he was doing he was doing great at glass. I mean, he was having a good time. But, you know, he wasn't just sitting next to me waiting for me to tell him, oh, hey, I got some elk. No, he was doing it himself, trying to find it himself. And I think that's one of the things that, I mean, I'm not saying that I do differently because I don't know what other fathers do, but that's definitely different than what our fathers did, because our dad just to be like, just wait, you know, don't worry about it. It's going to come. But, you know, I want my kids to get involved. My kids know how to handle a rifle. My dad was, not that they didn't give us the rifle, but they only gave us the rifle one time out of the year. And we thought it was the coolest thing. And all you want to do is shoot the trigger. My kids handle the rifle. They know how to put the bullets in. They know how to eject it. They know how to make sure it's, you know, clear. They know how to do that stuff. It's because, you know, I'm making sure that they know how to do that. You see all the dads sometimes that they don't let their kids. They're like, no, don't touch this. Don't touch that. I make my kids touch everything. You know, the knives. Another thing is like a big thing, like knives. You know how kids, every kid wants to hold a knife.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to like do something with a knife. Let them. You know, they're going to cut themselves. Yes, they're not going to cut their whole finger off. I mean, you saw it. Joey was playing with a knife last time when we went camping. What did he do? Cut himself. Mm-hmm. He's bleeding all over the place. What happened? He learned from his mistakes. Everybody's going to learn from mistakes. And that's the whole thing. If they don't make their mistakes now young, they're going to make those mistakes later when they're older. And, you know, it's better to do it now and with your supervision than when you're not there.
No, for sure. For sure. Well, I mean, so let's go back to the elk hunt. You met up, I introduced you to Matt Woodward. You met up with Matt. And you said that's when the hunt actually started getting fun for him.
Oh, my God. Game changer. Game changer. I mean, John, I know I gave you a little guilt trip, but basically it was I came back from that on the third day, and you know, he had to go back to school. And I called you, and I'm like, John, I feel defeated. And my wife looked at me, and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, you know how much time I put into that hunt. I mean, I went out there. I can't tell you. I mean, so many people were, like, rooting for me, and not only for me, for my son, and everybody was giving me so much information. And, like, you know, like when you feel defeated, you're just like, I don't know what I did wrong. And then you're like, let me make a phone call. And the second you made that phone call to Matt, and he's like, yeah, I can help you out. I mean, my spirits were like, oh, my God, it may happen. I mean, it's hunting. You never know what's going to happen. But I knew that something good was going to come out of it. And I remember the first thing that when I spoke with Matt, because, you know, you called him and you contacted him. And the first words that came out of his mouth was, Anthony, whatever we're going to do, we're going to have fun. And that was like, you know what? You're right. Let's just have fun. I mean, it's supposed to be fun. And we, you know, when I met him that on that Thursday, I mean, it was a Wednesday. I met him on Wednesday of the, you know, 2 days left of the hunt. I got there. I thought I was only going to see Matt. And Matt brought out his buddy Steve Doyle. And let me tell you something. Those guys, it was like being in a high school reunion because those guys were just like shooting the shit, talking about everything, involving Sebastian. Sebastian was like, oh, my God, this is great. I mean, he loved it. He had the best time with those guys from, like, the moment we missed him. And, I mean, until the end. And he didn't want to leave them. He wanted to, like, hang out, stay, sleep at their house, and do whatever. I mean, and that was the main thing, was to have fun. And that was the key. It was, he's like, listen, we're going to have fun. Even if we don't see anything, we're going to have fun. And I tell you, if I mean, you saw that little clip that I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
The kid had a smile from ear to ear. And let me tell you, they made him walk, like, mountains that I never thought that he could probably do. And not to say I want to, like, take away from my son, but that was some scary, scary stuff that we did. In the snow, ice, sleet. I mean, the rocks were slippery, everything. I mean, the stuff that we went through,
mm-hmm.
and these guys have no filter on where we're going to go. They were like, the elk are there, we're going to go there. We have to climb down this freaking canyon. We're going to climb down the canyon, go up another canyon, and make our way there. And he did everything they had asked for. I mean, like I said, we put 20 miles on our boots. I mean, I have it on my GPS every step that we took. And when they just made him smile. And that was the main thing. It was like, every time they're like, hey, come on, Sebastian. They encouraged him. You know, he got tired. You know, I had to pat him on his butt a little bit to get him up a couple of the ridges. You know, they're really steep. But the main thing was he had no pack on. So that made a big difference. When he went with Matt and Steve,
mm-hmm.
he was no pack, no gun. I was the mule, and he was just able to just hike. And I think that was a big thing of him being able to, like, go as long as he did. Because we didn't stop for 2 days until, I don't know, 4 o'clock, 4:30, the last day.
Right. And you guys end up getting a shot on a bull, good bull too.
And yeah, so, I mean, he sat here. I'll explain to you, and this is talk about patience. The first day we saw a small spike, and we tried to make it happen. However, there was all the hunters in the area, and we kind of had to back out because we didn't want to ruin it for them. The second day when we went, I mean, we got on a ridge early in the morning. We found a couple cows, and then we found two spike bulls, and we made a play. And there were like 700 yards from us, and they were about to, like, go over a ridge, and they're like, hey, you want to try shooting at one? And I asked Sebastian, he goes, yeah. And, you know, 700 yards is a long shot. And I'm like, let's just try. It was a spike bowl, and he gets on it. And, you know, for him to get on it with the scope by himself, I didn't even help him out. That was already a goal that I was glad that he already set on his own. You know, you know how hard it is? I mean, we've taken out many people to find people, you know, game in the optics, let alone 15 by 56. And now you're talking about a scope that, you know, the picture is smaller, and he did it by himself. And that had to do with all the practice that we did prior to the hunt. So he got on that, he shot at that, he missed about a foot low, and they ran over the ridge, and Matt's like, let's go. So we went down another ridge, came back up, got back on the ridge, and then we saw the realm. I mean, it was, I don't know, about 350 elk in that video that I showed you, John?
Yeah, so it was a lot.
I mean, Steve owes Matt probably a couple $1,000, I think, in finding bulls. Because, I mean, they had my son and Steve made a bet with Matt about who could find the most bulls on that trip. And when they found that, I mean, Matt's jaw just dropped. I mean, he was like in awe. Like, they were all moving down into lower ground. So Matt's like, we're going after them. And we went after them. I mean, if you see the video, him going down those canyons, I mean, if my wife was there, she would, like, kill me to see what he went through. Like, she would have been so scared. But he did it. And that's the whole thing, is he did it. And, you know, they ice skated on ice in a little pond. And Sebastian was like, you know, this is all on the way to get that elk. And he was making it fun for him. And that's the key that we sometimes as parents forget, is like, listen, you got to have fun with these kids. You can't make it just about the kill. You got to make it about the experience. So that went a long way with Matt and Steve, and they just made him at ease. And then, you know, we got there and we finally got on the elk. And I mean, in the video, you can see he makes a great, great shot. He was patient, waited. He listened to everything that Matt and Steve and me, and we would, you know, it was like a group effort. Takes a shot, he drops the elk. First shot, drops the elk. And the elk is like, you know, on the ground, twitching. And as the elk is on the ground, you're seeing about 200 elk passing this freaking elk, going right by it, you know. And they're just, and we're like, okay, shoot again. And Sebastian was like hesitant to shoot because there was so many like crossing its path, but they were kind of like in the back of the elk, not in front of it. So he was like shooting low, because, you know, I always teach him, hey, do not shoot unless you're sure you have the shot. And he was waiting to have the perfect shot. And, you know, as an experienced hunter, you know how to, you know, take that pressure on and make it count. And he kept on shooting low because he didn't want to shoot anything above the elk and kill something else. Which, to be honest with you, I was so proud of him, you know, to think like that. As a 12-year-old boy, you know, remembering everything, you know, we did the safety classes, you know, the hunter safety class, and he remembers all that. And we basically saw the elk, you know, down, and Matt's like, pick up the stuff, let's go. So we grab all the stuff, we head there, we get within like 70 yards from it, maybe less than 80 yards. And let alone the shot was at 188 yards, okay? That's like a chip shot for my son, all right? We run over there. I get the tripod ready with the gun on it, rack another round. As he's about to shoot, the freaking elk picks up and just jets down the canyon like he never got hit. I mean, it was probably 3 minutes from maybe 2.5 minutes from the first shot.
Right, and swap around.
At that last second, he just got his footing and just jetted down. And we were like, we couldn't believe it. Like, we thought it was done. And we just he was never ever able to like put another shot in him. And I mean, he was devastated. I mean, he just didn't know what happened. Like, he saw the elk down. He saw it. He thought he was done. We told him, you know, he was done, and it wasn't done. It was just an act of faith of God that the elk lived. And he must have like shot it right in between the, well, Matt was thinking he shot it right between the what's it called?
Spine.
In the brisket, yeah. In the, yeah. And it just, you know, we found like little pieces of meat and very little bit of drops of blood. I mean, maybe like 3 or 4. And that's it. And we just, there was too many tracks to find his, because like I said, it was like 250 elk that passed, and we just never could turn them up. I mean, it just happened, and let me tell you, we hiked a lot to find it, and we did not find anything.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
I mean,
you guys gave it hell, and, you know, the important thing is that he had a good time. And I think the moral of the story, the moral of this whole podcast is three things. Have patience with your kids. Make sure they're very well equipped and prepared. And have fun. Make sure that they enjoy it. Because if they don't enjoy it, then they're not going to want to go hunting with you. You know, it's very rare that you give your kids, you know, some bad experiences that they're going to want to do that same, you know, action any more, you know. So it's just like you were saying with the, you know, getting scoped in the eye and stuff like that. It's, you know, that wasn't fun for him, so he didn't want to do it again, you know. But, you know, all in all, man, I think you did a good job. And
thank you.
You know, Joey's been bugging me. He wants to go out.
Oh, they think you're God. They think you're God with the hunting. Oh, my God. Joey was on the coos deer hunting with my dad, and he's like, everything. Oh, if we brought Zio John, we would get this. If we brought Zio, I'm like, hey, Zio John, it's okay. I go with him. I mean, it's everything Zio John
knows
about hunting. Oh, God.
They don't know any better. They don't know any better.
That's all right. You're number one hunter in their book, which is great, and I love it, because they love watching the videos. They even listen to the podcast too. If you don't know about it, they listen to the podcast with me, and they love it. They're like, "Oh, that's Zio John."
Cool.
They think it's so cool. Yeah. So.
That's awesome. Well, Tone, I gotta take off, man. I'm gotta go catch a plane. Definitely gonna have you on one more time here, and we'll. I want to get Joey and Paul on, too, and we'll just have a little, like, powwow and share some of the old stories and some of the old experiences. I think people get a kick out of it. Yeah, I guess normally at this time I would say if you want to find out about Anthony, but like you said, Anthony doesn't do social media. So.
But if anybody listening wants to buy a house in Arizona, you could contact me. Through John, it is fine. If you need to buy a house in Arizona, I am here for you, all right?
There you go. Yeah, Anthony's a real estate agent.
Stallone
real estate agent
Realty.
Super dad.
StalloneRealty.com.
Yep.
Exactly.
There you go. All right, well, Tom, look, I will talk to you soon. And,
all right, man.
I'll let you know
how this
expo is.